We could spend a week on the next topic, but we don't have a week. We've got 45 minutes. So I'm hoping just to skim the surface for you, to really just raise it as an issue, and hopefully you can do some more study on it. Some of the stuff I'm going to be sharing with you comes from a massive book called How to Teach the Male Brain. Someone's actually had a go at it. It's a very comprehensive neurological study. It's been written by a woman who's a psychologist and also who taught school for many years. How to Teach the Male Brain. It is possible, ladies. Yeah, it just takes a lot of effort. Let me explain to you why we need to think more clearly about this. We are living in a rapidly blurring world. I don't know if you've noticed that. You know, it's hard to know the distinction between certain things. And we're moving in a world that refuses to be binary anymore. And so we need to address this particular issue. I think there's been good and bad that's come out of the rise of feminism, for instance. You know, the rise of feminism was necessary, actually, because women were oppressed for far too long. I think if we could go all the way back to Genesis, we can see why that's been the case. When God speaks to Eve, he says to her, "Your desire will be for your husband, and he will rule over you." Now, the word desire there is the same word that is used of sin in Genesis chapter 4 when God speaks to Cain and says to him, "Sin is crouching at your door. It desires to have you." The desire there is not a sexual desire. It's a desire to rule. It's a desire to dominate. And so the desire that the woman has is to dominate, but he will rule over you. And unfortunately, that rule has not been the rule as we'd expect Christ to rule, but it's been the rule that man has exercised over his creation, which is to absolutely rule it with an iron fist and to oppress and to break rather than to love and to nurture and to lay down his life. You see, that's how Jesus rules. Jesus rules by laying down his life. That's how he leads. That's how he is the head of the church. Yet men have not done the same thing. And so there is a sense in which feminism was important. It brought a corrective. Unfortunately, it's gone the other way now. The pendulum has swung full swing, and things have gone totally mad. And we're living in a world now where equality has gone totally mad, because we are now dissolving the boundaries, we are getting rid of any of the distinctions, we're getting rid of diversification, and most often when men are portrayed in the media, they're portrayed as idiots. You can see that in your sitcoms, all your sitcoms, the father figure is the fool. You can even see it, I suppose, in some way, in the viral video that's been going around about the bloke whose kids interrupted his... Have you seen that one? Everybody's seen that one. Have you seen the new one with the woman? If it was a woman doing this, she would handle all these things just fine, wouldn't she? Why? Because the man's a fool. That's why he can't do it in this way. Most notably, in that particular video, they had the woman doing all kinds of household stuff. Not so. Which I don't think really helps their cause in any way, shape, or form. She's cleaning toilets and cooking the roast and doing the ironing. It's a bit odd, really. That's a bit stereotypical, wouldn't you think? I thought feminism was trying to get them out of that, and now they're back in the kitchen. But you can see that. It's that kind of angle, isn't it? Now, we don't want to say that... We don't want to affirm this kind of ridiculousness. We want to say people are equal but different. God has made us equal in the image of God, but we are different. He has assigned roles. He's equipped us differently to fulfill those roles in our society. I mean, that's one of the things why, you know, I should say to my wife, I'd love to get up for the 2 o'clock feed, but I'm not equipped for it. So, you know, get on with it. I'm equipped in other ways. My hearing doesn't allow me to hear the baby screaming at 2 o'clock in the morning. But if a twig gets stood on outside, I'm awake. Because this is my patch. Yeah? So we are made differently. Now, I'm going to read out a bunch of statements, and I want you to shout out, boy or girl, if you think boys or girls are better at this particular task. You ready for it? You ready? Okay, you just shout out boy or girl, okay? Drawing a pretty picture. Making a paper plane fly far. We have a dissenter. Sitting quietly while you read a passage of the Bible. Counting the number of times you say when you're speaking. Being polite about a disappointing present like a pair of socks. Being honest about a disappointing present like a pair of socks. Telling you every detail about their birthday party. Reenacting a fight that happened at their birthday party. These are generalizations. Of course they're generalizations. They're stereotypes. You don't have to live up to the stereotype, okay? But it is generally true. And that's why it has been observed in this way. Boys and girls are different. God has made us different. Genesis chapter 1 and 2 affirms that we are made in God's image. We are made to jointly to rule the world that He has made, to manage. We are male and female. We are equal, but we are different. So why do we sometimes shy away from those differences? Why don't we celebrate them instead? As the people that God has given us to complement us, as men and women have been given men to complement them, so that in their complementarity, they can represent the image of God in the world in which we live. Now, we know that people are different. We know that men and women are different. We can see it in different ways. So, for instance, that's how men see color, ladies. Okay? We're very simple. We're very uncomplicated. We're much more like dogs than we are like cats. Okay? Very uncomplicated, very simple. And so when you in your class decide that you want to play a game and you tell the children they need to collect the peach piece of paper rather than the pink piece of paper, you're not going to be helping your boys at all. The girls will know the difference. The boys won't know the difference at all. And neuroscience backs all of this kind of stuff up. Women are drawn to shape and warmer colors like reds and pinks. It's not social conditioning. It's just a fact. It's how their brain activity works. And boys are drawn to movement and blue and greens. And they are drawn to less colors. So a boy will take one crayon and color the whole craft activity sheet over with the same color crayon. Everything is just blue. He's not been socially conditioned to do that. His brain's wired in that way. It's true that men have more brain cells than women do. It's a fact. It's a neurological fact. But it's also true that women have more neural pathways between their brain cells. So in that sense, women are denser, and for good reason. It's a good thing to be dense when it comes to your brain, by the way. You want to be dense. You want to be considered very, very dense. So we are different. Let's see what Eton College has to say. This was an article in the Times. This was the new principal of Eton College. He said, "There is more to educating boys in single-sex school than I had previously believed. We need a better understanding of what works for boys and what works for girls. Too much of the time we treat them the same. That's why we have a national problem of disaffected teenage boys," says Tony Little, who was at that stage the new head at Eton. Now, he's only just come to discover that while he's in post. One wonders how he got the job. But there it is. And I think we can learn quite a few things from what he says in this particular article. And I'm just extracting four. As I said, we're skimming the surface this morning. We don't have time to go into too much detail. We generally teach the way we like to learn. That's our starting point. So if you're a kinesthetic learner, you'll teach in a kinesthetic kind of way. If you're a visual learner, you teach in a visual way. If you're auditory or whatever it is, you teach in your default position. Therefore, if you were a woman, you will teach like a woman. And you will appeal to girls. And that's the whole problem, is that the entire schooling system is generally populated by women. And most of the teachers are women. And so that's why it's interesting to note that boys don't generally do as well at school, certainly not in the early stages, as girls do. Because the system is set up for girls. So let me highlight four points that Little makes in this article about boys and their brains and how it develops. Lots of neuroscience goes into all of this. If you get hold of that book, Teaching the Male Brain, it'll go into all the neuroscience behind it. First thing he says is that boys need to be more physically active when learning than girls do. Now, once again, this is a generalization, but it is generally true. Tony Little vividly remembers watching an 8-year-old boy standing at the back of the class, hopping from foot to foot and staring periodically out of the window. It was behavior that would have got him slung out of most state primary school classrooms, where he would have been labeled disruptive and marched off to wait outside the head's office. In the class, the teacher left him alone And when it came to the assessment at the end of the lesson, he got the answers to everything correct, recalls Little. He was concentrating, but to do that, he needed to move around rather than sitting still. Sound familiar? You're trying to get the boys to sit down? Ladies, let me explain something to you. All you need to do is observe men, then you'll understand boys. Or understand boys to understand men. When a bloke's on a mobile phone, what does he do? He walks. He's constantly walking around, isn't he? That's what he's doing. He's up and down and thing. And, you know, my wife says, you know, you're going to wear a path, a hole in the carpet over here, because that's what I'm doing. I need to think, and therefore I need to move in order to think. Now, I think there's a sense in which, you know, you may struggle to keep your 8 to 10-year-old boys still and keep them listening. I think we're at the stage now where this is, in one sense, true of all children, but it is particularly true of boys, that they need to move in order to concentrate. Just because they're not looking at you and not looking at you with their eyes and not fidgeting or doing something doesn't mean they're not listening. The kids that are growing up now, these sort of digital natives. I mean, again this morning as I left home, I've got a kid sitting on the couch. The Nintendo 2DS is open, so that's one, two screens. And then above that is propped with one hand an iPod Touch. We are busy streaming a Minecraft video, but we are playing Mario Kart on the bottom screen. Yeah? I'm like, mate, come on. What are you doing? Are you playing Mario Kart or are you watching a Minecraft? Doing both. They can do it. They actually manage perfectly well dual screening, or in this morning, tri-screening. Yeah? You and I try and do that and our heads explode. So I think we're beyond that stage where children have to sit and look at you in order to listen to you. And I think what we need to try and do instead is to give them something that creates a focal point for them. They need to move and fiddle in order to hear. We need to think about how we might engage their senses. And how we need to get them moving. So we provide a lot of games in our resources, more so now than when we started. But I want to get boys moving. I think if you can structure your Sunday school lesson around an 8 to 10-year-old boy and keep them engaged, you'll keep everybody engaged. But somehow it doesn't work the other way around. If you only cater for the girls, you'll lose the boys. If you cater for the boys, you don't lose the girls. They're a lot more flexible that way. So, you know, I think about a boy called Han in our Sunday school. We were doing a lesson, and it was on, I think it was Mark chapter 2. The point I was trying to get across was that only Jesus can deal with our sin problem. We've got lots of problems in life, and some of them we can sort out ourselves, but only Jesus can deal with the sin problem, Mark chapter 2. So in order to illustrate that, I had an obstacle course set up in the class, and we were jumping over the different obstacles, and then I gave them one obstacle which I knew they would never be able to get across. I drew two lines on the floor. That was further than any child could jump. Even Carl Lewis, when he was that age, would not have managed. And I said to them, okay, the obstacle course includes jumping across this over here. If one of you touches your foot here, your whole team is out. Your whole team gets disqualified. I'm trying to teach federal representation while I'm busy, by the way. So we play this game. Of course, they go around the first time. No one can clear this. It's impossible for anybody to clear. And they start complaining about it. I say, okay, I'll tell you what. We're going to do this thing again. If you say, help me over there, I will pick you up and carry you across. But you have to say, help me, otherwise I can't do it for you. Yeah. And the kids go around, and each kid's saying, help me, help me, help me. And then it gets to Han, who refuses to say, help me. He wants to have a go, because he's the man. And when you look at Han, you realize that aerodynamically and in terms of physics, there is no way that he is going to get across this. I said, go on, mate. Your whole team's dependent upon you getting across there. You want to risk it? Yeah, he wants to risk it. Up the stakes, he's all for it. He has a go. He fails. I said, tell you what, because I'm gracious, I'll let you have another go. You want to have another go, or you want to just say, help me? No, he wants another go. Eventually, you know, he's almost like dislocated his knees. There's blood all over the floor, and he's still not wanting to say, help me. I said, mate, your entire team is going to go down unless you say this. And he said, help me. that became one of the key illustration points in my discuss and apply with my kids. I said, sometimes the hardest thing to say is to say, sorry, please help me. Jesus is the only one who can forgive our sin problem. We need to say, Jesus, can you help me? And sometimes that's the hardest thing to do. Did you see how Hun struggled to ask for help? Of course, when he did say help me, I realized this was a really stupid thing on my part because I now needed to get him from there to there on my own without a crane. And anyway, he needed to move to learn. That point came home, and when I discussed it afterwards, the light went on for him. He understood. He understood very clearly what was required. Second thing to say is that boys are by nature more competitive than girls. One of the things that's wrong with our world at the moment and our whole education system is the idea that anyone who competes gets the prize. And that competition in some way belittles children or makes them feel bad or unworthy. We are going to be ruled very soon by people who were awarded for participating. That's how we're going to be ruled by people like that. In fact, we probably are already. Little says the following. He says, what irks boys is not being outshone by someone else, but not having the opportunity to shine in the first place. And you can see that, because as soon as you add a little bit of competition to the game that you play, all of a sudden the boys are alive. Have you noticed that? If there's a competition or something to be won, that's it. They're there. You've got their attention. Because that's how they are wired. And so we make no excuse for competition. We do have competitions. We're not giving out sweets or massive prizes every single week, but we are having a bit of a competition. And I think what's more important than is that we are teaching children to win graciously and to lose without throwing a tantrum. So it took a long time for little Naomi in our Sunday school to realize that it's just a game, it's not worth crying about. Yeah, she'd cry every week. She always found herself on the most rubbish team. And she was always losing. I said, Naomi, stop it. Stop crying. We don't cry about games. Just stop it. Yeah? You do that for a number of weeks, and then she starts crying. She says, I'm not crying. It's just a game. Yes, it is just a game, Naomi. That's right. We've had fun. It's a game. It's over. Maybe you'll win next week. We need competition. The boys need competition. Children need to learn to win graciously and lose without throwing a tantrum. Thirdly, I want to say that boys are more emotional than girls. That might be a shock to you. Neuroscience is saying that in moments of stress, it is natural for boys to behave impulsively. And if you have a boy who's behaving badly, or he's highly charged, then he may not simply it's not that he's simply being naughty. It could be that there's some sort of other emotional issue that we need to try and get behind. So we must be careful we don't treat them as non-emotional beings, a-emotional, you know, having no emotions whatsoever. Because we think, okay, women are emotional, boys are not emotional. Actually, the boys are more emotional. They sometimes struggle to connect with what their emotions are. They sometimes find it hard to articulate what those emotions are, but instead of trying to just send them off to the naughty corner and write them off as a brat, it's worth trying to work out what's troubling them. Sometimes it is feelings of inadequacy in some way. It could be something else that's troubling them. And I think it's harder than it sounds, really, to try and get beneath the surface with guys, especially because they're not articulating in the same way, but we do need to encourage it. So please do treat boys as emotional beings. Try to get behind their behavior on the outside. Positively, it's going to mean that we can use emotional engagement. We can engage their emotions in our teaching. So we mustn't be afraid to do that. You know, there's this idea that if it's more emotional and it's for women and boys won't connect with it. But if it's something that they are passionate about, there is a raw emotion there as well. Isn't it true that a boy can be the master of trivia on a subject that interests him? Yeah, absolutely. They can tell you every fact and figure about a particular thing. My son's into marine biology. Anything under the water, he's interested in. And there's been some programs on TV and some of the stuff he's done at school where the facts have actually been wrong. And he's like, whoa, that's wrong. You know, whatever fish it is, whatever the name is, named this long, it doesn't actually whatever. And then you go and look it up in an encyclopedia. He's actually right, you know. because he is a master. And you think yourself, you can remember that, but you can't remember to brush your teeth? And so what we're going to try and do then is to try and really engage them in the subject that gets them going. If they are passionate about something, they will be very passionate about it. And it won't be a problem to teach. You know, they can sit for hours playing Minecraft, can't they? How do we get them involved in an emotional way in the subject in order to help them to learn in a better way? Fourth thing, that boys cannot multitask like girls. So perhaps the viral video this week was correct. The man is not capable of doing a roast and ironing and doing a conference call with the BBC. He says the following. He says, my best advice to any mum of a difficult teenage boy is this. Only nag them about one thing at a time. I haven't even finished and you ladies know exactly where this is going. If you want to be successful as a mum or a teacher of a difficult boy, focus on one thing at a time. If your son has an untidy room, that is the issue. Not the fact that he's home late or doesn't wash his breakfast plate. The teenage male brain can only cope with one thing at a time. It either switches off or it explodes when it's overloaded. Think that's true? Yes. It's absolutely true. And so from a parenting perspective, you focus on one issue at a time and you deal with that. You can't fight all the battles all the time. Now, there is a sense in which I think children are more able to multitask, but it's probably true that boys are less able to do so. And Little goes on and he says the following. He says, the sadness is that in too many schools, boys and girls are still taught in similar ways to the detriment of the former. He describes an experiment in America in which young boys and girls were asked to draw pictures and the teacher's reaction to their work was monitored. Typically, the five-year-old girls drew stick figures while the boys drew kinetic pictures. So you've got cars crashing and being splattered across the page. When teachers questioned the children about their drawings, the girls said the figures represented their family, mum and dad and me. When the boys presented their drawings to the teachers, they were asked, where are the people? The researchers concluded that by the age of six, boys had learned from their teachers that drawing was best done by girls. So now you present them with craft work, and you tell them to draw something, and you're amazed that they just scroll across it half-heartedly and then want to go off and play. Well, that's what they've been conditioned to believe. So we want to give them one task at a time, but you may need to create a focal point for them. So what the book does is it talks about the fact that if you've got a child doing a mathematics problem, even allowing a boy to sit and tap the pen with the sum helps them to focus. So he's moving, he's tapping, he's focusing on this particular sum that he's doing. Being able to rock on a chair is a great thing for boys. Who got told off at school for rocking on a chair? Let me tell you, there's a school in Johannesburg that they have welded arcs to the back of the chairs to enable boys to rock safely. Yeah? And they provide the boys with clicky pens. Were you allowed clicky pens at school? I wasn't allowed clicky pens at school. But sometimes I find that I need to fiddle with something as I think a problem through. So you sit and you click the pen. Boys can handle that. That's what they need. And so we need to be providing those kinds of things. What can we do in a Sunday school class? Because we're not talking about school class too much. What can we do in Sunday school class? Well, we want to think about getting boys moving. We want to talk about creating a focal point for them. Let me give you some examples. I've given you the example of Hun, who was moving in order to learn. It may be that because boys don't have great small motor skills, they've got better big motor skills, that instead of getting boys to fill out an activity sheet, which has got to be the most boring thing in the world to do, which requires fine motor skills, you may get them to come and write an answer on the board for you, which now requires much bigger motor skills. You may instead get them to draw a picture rather than write an answer. You may get them to take a passage of scripture and to break them up into different groups and get them to cartoon the whole thing for you. Could they draw simple figures to cartoon what is going on in that particular passage? Could you use tables? Could they tabulate things to compare so they can see it visually? But there's an active involvement in it. Can this group look at this passage and list all the things that it says about Jesus? Can this group list take this passage? Can you list all the things that says about the rulers of Jesus' day or whatever? Or how did Pilate view Jesus? How does God view Jesus? You get some of those passages, like Acts chapter 2 sort of brings that out. How did the rulers and the people regard Jesus? And how does God regard Jesus? So you're wanting to try and do that sort of thing. If you're going to be highlighting, well, you know, pink highlighters will work for girls. Yellow highlighters are neutral. No one sees a yellow highlighter. So stop using them. Okay? We want to get our boys active in this particular way. It's going to affect the kind of illustrations that you use. If you want this emotional engagement, it's got to be a subject that interests them. Now, I understand that if you're a woman, then perhaps your first port of call in terms of an illustration is not going to be a football game. But actually, that's probably what's going to get your boys going, which means you need to use it. So a friend of mine who works for a large church in London, she says she's adopted Chelsea as a football team. She doesn't particularly like football, but she's decided she's got to get into this for the sake of her ministry. Because it means she's got a common point, and she's learnt about the game, and she tries to use illustrations from football in order to teach the Bible. Because she knows it gets the boys excited. It provides an opportunity for her to engage them. So one of the things that we did was Jesus comes to John for baptism. Why is Jesus being baptized? John's baptism was a baptism of repentance. Jesus doesn't need to be baptized. Why is Jesus being baptized? Now, to explain that, we used a football analogy. Yeah? The footballers are on the field. Someone gets injured. Someone else needs to come and substitute. That is Jesus. He's got to come and help us finish the game. But before he can get on the field, what does he need to do? Well, he needs to wear the team shirt, doesn't he? So his baptism is like putting on the team shirt. It's putting on the team colors. He's saying, I'm one of you. Okay? He's not a sinner like them, but he is one of them. And he's going to play the game for us when we can't play the game for ourselves. So what I'm really trying to say to you is that I don't think it's impossible for ladies to teach men, boys. I think it just requires an extra level of work. In the same way that if you're a kinesthetic learner and you're trying to adapt your class to reach visual learners, you will apply an extra level of preparation. And so it means exactly the same when it comes to teaching boys. To be aware that they are people who are need to be physically active. They are competitive. If you can have something competitive in the class to get them going, something emotional that can engage them, and something that allows them to multitask, or creates a focal point, rather, in the multitasking that we're doing. So what I did the one day was we were teaching Genesis chapter 1. I'd given the kids each a square of tinfoil with five cuts in it, which if you fold it up on the cuts, you then get a little foil man. So the one part makes his head, his arms, his torso, his legs. That was the intro idea to the lesson. And what I did was, at the end of that, I said to them, okay, you can carry on playing with those while I teach the lesson. And one of the women who was helping, she said, I thought you would have taken that distraction away. And I said, no, it wasn't a distraction. It was a focal point. And it was amazing that even though the kids were busy playing with this, they were answering all my questions as I was going through it. Even though they were busy playing, they were tweaking it and giving a nose and ears and really going into a lot of detail. They were listening. Do you see? And in fact, there's a sense in which their listening was almost enhanced because they had something that was a focal point that wasn't a distraction. And I'm finding that a lot with kids these days, generally. And I think it comes from this whole three-screen principle. You know, people are telling us that in terms of neural plasticity, that their brains are actually changing. They are actually digital. And they are able to do this in a way that we don't know. So in terms of the boys, as I say, they do multitask, but it's got to be a focal point. But they don't multitask as well as girls. Does that make sense? Okay. We want our boys to grow up loving Jesus, don't we? We want to engage them. Studies will show you that 90% of the people who no longer attend church, who attended church as children, would have left by the age of 18. They'll show you as well that those who've left by that stage have already made the decision to leave by the age of 10. So they get dragged along to church for another 6 or 8 years, and then they decide not to go. So that makes that first 10 years absolutely critical, and we need to be engaging our boys. And if it means that we need to step out of our comfort zone, adapt our teaching style, do some more research on boys, chat to blokes who are around the church to see what would excite them if they were learning this particular lesson. It's worth doing something like that so that we can keep them engaged. And it's going to affect absolutely everything that we do. Okay? Any comments or questions? I'm going to stop there because I've said enough. Yeah.
You were saying about something that requires an extra layer of work.
Yeah.
In terms of the expectations for like time, should someone preparing a 40-minute Sunday school class be spending more time, less time, or about the same time as a preacher preparing for the minute?
It's funny. It's a good question. I don't think as much as a preacher. If you're using a published resource, that's already done a lot of the work for you. A preacher needs to get to grips with the text from beginning to end, probably spend 12 hours, I imagine, in a sermon. I'm not expecting my Sunday school teachers to do 12 hours. I'm expecting my Sunday school teachers to do 2, which is an hour in the text with a lot of help from a resource, and then another hour getting the rest of the stuff together. I think that's manageable. Yeah. And I think we mustn't spend so much time trying to work out the story, actually. So much time thinking how we're going to tell the story. Just tell the story. It's not complicated. You know, if you go to freebibleimages.org, they give you the story outline. It's in simple language, sometimes not simple enough. But what I'm saying is, if that's just the bricks, just lay the bricks out, as the Bible does. The teaching is actually going to come later. And that's where the connection comes between the two. Does that make sense? So we can spend so much time trying to elaborately tell a story and embellish a story and make it memorable. I don't really want to make stories memorable in the Bible because they're in the Bible. Yeah? We're not living in an oral society. We are living in a society where I can open up the Bible in my own language and read the story if I've forgotten what it said. The key thing for me is the memorable take-home thing. What is the take-home value for my kid? That is where I want it to be memorable. So I keep drumming that in. I drum it in through an intro idea. I drum it in the story. I drum it in the craft. I drum it in the game. And I drum it in the discuss and apply. And I drum it in again in the prayer idea. And by the end of it, even boys have worked out what it's about. Yeah. Yeah. Does that make sense? Yeah. Thank you to the person who pointed out that I do have numeric dyslexia. And so there will be some references that were in that outline today that were wrong. You can go and work out which they are. 1 Timothy 3:12 should really be 2 Timothy 3:12. Colossians 3:4-6 should really be Colossians 4:4-6. See? Numeric dyslexia.